welcome to Unjustly Maligned, the show for people who go against the grain. We seek to rehabilitate overlooked, ignored, derided, and just plain hated contributions to pop culture. Novels, movies, music, comic books, video games, tabletop RPGs, whatever. If everyone hates it, we'll find someone who loves it and let them explain why you should too. This is episode 19, and you can find the show notes at ump.fm. I'm your host, Anthony Johnston. And my guest today is a writer and editor specialising in Doctor Who, with short stories, critical anthologies, and a Big Finish audio play under her belt, not to mention her debut novel, Death Rituals, which is set for release in 2016. She's well known as the Scottish one on the award-nominated Who podcast Verity, and is also an avid gamer of 25 years standing, which she isn't well known for, but trust me, it's going to be relevant. She is, of course, Ms. Liz Miles. Liz, welcome to the show.
Hello. I like that. The Scottish one.
It's true, isn't it?
Annoyingly, sometimes, yes.
My family's all Scots and Irish, so...
Very sensible of you.
I won't hear a word said against it. Okay, so start us off, Liz. Tell us what you have chosen to talk about, and then give us some context around its release, when it was released, its reception upon release, why it is generally maligned, and then why you think that that is wrong.
I'm going to talk about Dragon Age 2, which is a RPG computer game that was released in 2011 from BioWare and was a follow-up to the epically successful Dragon Age Origins. And Dragon Age 2, initially on release, it actually got quite good critical reviews and it sold brilliantly. And then there was a very strong backlash against it for certain elements of the game, and the fan community became very scarily angry, I remember at the time. Sufficiently so that I stopped hanging out at BioWare forums at all, because there were a lot of very, very angry people about the game. And they were continuing to be angry for quite a long time. Because there are one or two slight flaws to this game. The most egregious for me would be this restricted to quite a small area. And in an RPG, one of the exciting things is you go out and explore new lands and investigate dungeons and find treasure. And that's fun. You don't really do that in Dragon Age 2. And you have dungeons that all look the same. There's one particularly bad one that's caverns underground, where they reuse the same map again and again and again, and try to pretend it's slightly different by blocking off passageways. But on the mini map, you can still see that you could go through there, because they don't bother to correct the mini map for the different ones. And there's a lot of that, but that particular cavern area, which if you played the game, you'll know the one I mean. It was you develop a certain hatred towards it, a sort of anger thing. Even though I love the game, I feel every time I step foot in that particular dungeon.
You're like, here we go again.
Yes. Or here we go, and I'm going to get slightly lost because you haven't got a mini map that actually matches the areas that I can wander through. So I'm going to be trying to get through a door that's not there and look like an idiot. Okay, no one can see me, but still I know. And the characters that are watching me know. I mean, they're almost real. They talk, they have pixels, they fight. You know, I feel them judging me when I crash into walls. The combat system, the Dragon Age Origins, one of the fantastic things, has got a very, quite a complicated, well, very great, combat system that requires you to pay a lot of attention to detail and to tactics and to micromanage in a way that I found really satisfying, and that it was really quite an achievement when there was a huge battle and you were fighting and you were down to so little mana and so few potions, and it really felt adrenaline-y, which is a word.
Yes, it is.
Whereas in Dragon Age 2, it's much faster, it's much more arcadey, and you get waves of enemies coming in that you have to just shoot down again and again, and you don't know how many waves there are. There isn't any sort of tactics involved, and at some point during the game, pretty early on, you can overpower yourself so much that it's no longer a challenge. It's just button mashing, and it's boring, and the combat's not exciting or a challenge. It's just an inconvenience in the way before you get to the next bit of the story. And then, perhaps most horribly of all for me, because I do love loot, It's got a terrible item system where you get very few of the items are worth anything. About a third of the items are any good at all to you because you're a rogue, you're a mage, or you're a warrior. And you're the only person who can wear any of the clothes. You can't hand out exciting items to your companions. And you can't use two-thirds of the items that you pick up. And you've got this wonderful system where it has a very short description, as though you're stuck in 1989, of what the item is. No picture. And it's just junk. And you go to a vendor and you click sell junk, and all the little stones and half-eaten things and random debris you've picked up worth a couple of coins each, they go. And it's so, it's just depressingly dull there. So for these reasons, and possibly some other ones, story-wise, it's been criticised for not feeling like you have, for feeling like you get railroaded into decisions that you've got no real power. And whatever you do, it doesn't change the outcome, which is one of actually one of the reasons why I really like it.
Interesting.
That's sort of the general area of why some people were pretty unthrilled.
I didn't know that about the minimap. That's got to be a symptom of rushed development. That's, you know.
Yeah, it was really quickly done, and there were updates. They expected it out much, much later, but then in the run up to the release, they changed the release date because apparently it had all gone so well and so smoothly, and they were like, "Hurrah, we're almost done. Let's just put it out."
Never a good idea. No,
but as it turned out, maybe 6-12 months more development and adding a few exciting new areas might have helped a little bit.
Well, or even in the case of squashing bugs, I know from games that I've been involved with myself that if you do happen to sort of think, oh, hang on, we're a little ahead of schedule, the best thing you can do is take that extra time and squash bugs. One of the reasons that the original Dead Space game was so sort of got praise for its polish was because they actually finished pretty much all development about 2 months ahead of schedule. But instead of bringing up the release date, they said, no, and they actually announced this at the time. They said, no, we're going to take those extra 2 months and just relentlessly squash every bug we can find. And as a result, you know, nobody cared that the game came out on its original release date rather than sooner. And what they got was a really polished game.
I'm very in favour of this. I like this a lot. This is why generally these days I don't buy PC games unless they've had their first patch. Sure it's a little smoother. Yeah, I broke my rule for Elder Scrolls Online. That was a mistake.
That's the old Windows tactic, isn't it? So you were playing this on PC?
Yes, right. I am a PC gamer, not a filthy console gamer.
Well, and it's everything I've read about this game indicates that compared to the first one, it was very much developed to be aimed at a console audience and made easier to play for console players.
Yes, that is why they changed much of the combat system. I think perhaps console players may have enjoyed it a little bit more, but you know, you've got 1,000 button mashing nonsense console games. If you don't want to have tactics and nuance involved in your combat, you've got your games already. You don't need to intrude on the RPG world that's clearly meant for PC.
Leave our thing alone.
Yes.
Are you an RTS player by any chance?
I was in the 90s. That was what I used to play a lot of turn-based strategy and RTS and point-and-click adventures until I discovered RPGs about 10 years ago, and from there it's like, this is quite exciting.
This combines all of those things. I asked because a lot of people I know who enjoy that sort of, the group tactics element and the looting and, you know, sort of the inventory management and stuff of RPGs generally err towards sort of RTS style of players as well.
Well, that would certainly be fair. I've played RTSs for as long as I can remember, although not so many in recent years. They might have had very exciting new developments, and I've got no idea about them because I'm still original Command and Conquer and Dune 2 are sort of the things I properly can play.
Yeah, as far as I know, the most sort of innovative, and this will get me in trouble, but the most innovative RTS thing that I've seen in recent years is, you know, the development of Dota-style games, which aren't even really RTSs. other than that, it's just better graphics.
I do like good graphics. It's nice and reassuring to see, you know, non-pixelated things on your screen.
See, I'm completely the opposite. I can't bear RTSs. I'm terrible at them. I don't have the sort of, you know, the microsecond reflexes that you need to play them properly. And as a result, when I'm playing a computer RPG, I don't care about combat tactics. I don't care about inventory management. I don't care about loot.
Oh dear. I don't think you understand the point of RPGs.
I'm all about, you know, the story. I am a sort of, when it comes to RPGs anyway, I just want the story. I want the narrative, and I don't really care about the mechanics, which is one of the reasons why I've never got into games like Dragon Age and Final Fantasy and stuff in a big way.
But Dragon Age, the narrative is the most beautiful thing about it. I mean, those are things I love that they play into it, but I wouldn't adore the game if it wasn't an epic scope of storytelling delight.
And that's what I've heard, and that's one of the reasons, that's another reason why I have kind of stayed away from them, is that, you know, they're all 40-hour games, and I don't have 40 hours these days to play a game.
Oh, don't be silly. Dragon Age Origins is about 100 hours.
Oh, is that all?
Yeah,
oh.
It's absolutely fantastic. You know, it's everyone should play it, you know, if you like fantasy novels or fantasy television of any sort. You deserve to play Dragon Age Origins.
I remember when the first Dragon Age was in development, and I was fervently looking forward to it. I was watching promo videos and stuff and thinking, wow, this is a game for me. I can't wait, because I love a good bit of old, you know, good old bit of swords and sorcery, a bit of D&D. I love all that stuff. And then, yeah, when it came out and the reviews all said, oh, yeah, this is like 50-plus hour game, I'm like,
You're allowed to divide it up into small sections, you know. You don't have to play it straight through without any sleep.
Can you? My goodness.
I'm informed that you can, yes.
Okay, so tell us more about the bits that you do like. And you mentioned the narrative, because that is something that I've always heard is really good in the Dragon Age games. But I also gather that was part of the backlash towards this as well. It wasn't just mechanics, was it?
Yes. I think narrative expectations for the game were way off. And although I think certainly with a game that's claiming to be the second series, you're justified in having certain narrative expectations of it. I don't think they did a bad job of emphasising how it was going to be different. So I have sort of limited sympathy for it, but some sympathy, because Dragon Age Origins, big epic scope, world-saving, adventuring all over this huge map, and 100 plus hours of gameplay. Whereas Dragon Age 2, a follow-up to this, is a game with about, oh, I don't know how much it is, for something for between 40 and 60 hours if you aren't trying to like just do the main quests and are actually interested in exploring the world and side quests and the companion stuff. And you're confined very much to one area, to one city, for a span of 7 years. Not in real time, obviously. And you visit the same areas, and you don't get to go very far afield, and you don't get to save the world. In fact, one of the things that I think that is criticised by it is you are, as a character, certainly compared to other RPGs, very powerless. What you do does not have much of an effect. You're more a kind of trying to survive events than take control of them by the end of things, which I think is what really appealed to me about it, that you're not this... Well, you are called the Champion of Kirkwall. Kirkwall's the city, and you do technically save the city at one point. Well, several points. But it doesn't there's a huge conflict going on in the Dragon Age world between the mages, who are magic users, and the Templars, who are the militant arm of the main religion. And mages can be very dangerous in this world. And using magic, they can summon demons from a place called the Fade, and they can take over the mage's body, and they can do horrible things and distort things around them and destroy everything, and people get killed, and it's all very horrible. And the Templars are there to make sure that mages don't succumb to the temptations that would lead to them being possessed by a demon. And what generally happens is they get held in sort of open prisons and are guarded by Templars. And for some reason, quite a lot of mages don't like being held in prison for a crime, no crime they've committed, just because they happen to be born with magic. And quite a lot of Templars, although, are like, well, that's great and everything, but you have the potential to basically explode and kill a whole bunch of people. So we'd quite like to protect the majority and infringe on your liberties a fair amount. And that's the main conflict that's set up here between those two forces, between the mages wanting their freedom and the Templars trying to protect the people.
I like that. That's a good classic conflict, yeah.
Yeah, it's one which was sort of hinted at, it is touched upon in Dragon Age Origins, and you can clearly see the problems. One of the ways you can start playing Dragon Age Origins is as a mage, and you're just about to do the test in one of these towers, so your backstory is being part of the mage circle, the prison type thing, in one of the lands in Dragon Age World. And there's one of the great things about Origins, there's so many different sorts of conflicts between different species and the politics and how everyone relates to each other. But most of it is touched on, not shallowly, but it doesn't focus particularly on any of it. Whereas it does take this one conflict in Dragon Age 2 and it really examines it. Even amongst your various companions, you've got characters that you, as the hero, you pick up your companions along the way, and they have very different views on how mages should be treated, on blood magic, which is the kind of magic that helps demons, that's used to summon demons, and what the solution to this problem is, and whether there is a solution at all to it, which you become involved in either because you're a mage yourself or because your sister's a mage, and if you choose to play a rogue or warrior character.
That sounds great.
It is great. It's very exciting.
Yeah, that sounds really great. Although I will say that any fantasy world that has the phrase blood magic in it, you just know that that's never a good thing.
Well,
it's almost by definition.
You say that, and yet, yes, that is a fair point. The blood, one of the character, your companions that you end up, you know, being friends with or being rivals with, is called Meryl, and she's an elf, and she's absolutely lovely. The elves in Dragon Age 2 all have Welsh accents, and Meryl is actually played by Eve Miles.
Oh, wow.
famous from Torchwood. And she's absolutely adorable. She's so sweet, and she's so innocent, she's so well-meaning, and she's also a blood mage, for very good reasons. She's wanting to try and save the history of her elven people. This is another big conflict thing between humans and elves, and also between the elves that have moved to cities and become part of suburban environments, and the Dalish elves who are trying to keep their culture. But she's very keen on blood magic, but she's really sweet and lovely, and at no point gets possessed by a demon. Just, you can ruin her life, possibly, by certain decisions, but she manages to get through it all without making a demon, which is something that not very many mages in the game manage to do, which it kind of gets predictable, I guess, that basically every mage you come in contact with for any length of time who isn't a member of your party will eventually turn to blood magic and become a raging great demon and try to kill you, which does sound as though you think, well, that's not really going to put you on the side of the mages, except I think they kind of had to do that because otherwise it was just far too easy a choice, because the Templars are locking these people up for having committed no crime. And why would you support this? Unless it turns out that, in fact, every single mage you meet is going to turn into a demon. And then you might concede that possibly the Templars have a point.
Yeah, to really hammer home the danger.
Yeah. When you haven't actually met anyone who's, you know, been fairly decent all the way through.
Apart from the elf.
Apart from the elf and your friend Anders, who's another, the characters in it I remember where I was going with this. Yeah, so that's the sort of setting, and those are the big themes of the thing. And as the hero in this game, you might think that you'd somehow be able to resolve this conflict in a satisfactory way. But you can't and you don't. And nothing you can do can change that. And that's part of the reason that a lot of people find it so unsatisfying, is that there is no way to win, really.
Well, you can win your own challenges, but you can't solve the world's problems.
Yeah, you don't have the power. As it's a refuting the great man of history thing, where one individual can make such a difference as to turn history around, which really appeals to me because I enjoy history, and it's generally not the actions of one single heroic individual that alters a horrific situation.
No.
It's a long, grinding, horrible struggle in order to work something where there are two parties that are at each other's throats. You can't just wander in and do some heroics and then everyone is happy and everything is settled. And having that perspective and having that, the sort of the much smaller, tighter scope of all of what you're trying to do is survive this, really appeals. And the narrative of the hero isn't with this big world conflict that's happening around them. Rather, it's with the characters that they meet and the stories that they have to tell and your involvement in their lives and how that takes place and how you affect that. That's the real story. That's where you get to be the hero. The characters that are in the game are absolutely fantastic. It's so difficult to say this because I do love the one in Dragon Age Origins as well, but they're possibly better developed ones. And rather than them teaming up with you and you're all off on a world-saving quest, all the way through, they've got their own lives and their own motivations and their own goals and ambitions of what they want to do. And because you're restricted to the very small environment, it focuses it much more on the characters rather than the world or the settings. And you have the opportunity to completely ruin most of their lives if you really want to, or to save them and get them out of there alive. You can kill off about half your party. It won't let you kill off absolutely everyone because you do need a couple of people at the end, but it is possible to get them to hate you and to leave at various points, or for them to die. One of them you can kill.
Oh, you can actually kill them.
Yeah, to me when people have criticised the finale, you end up having to fight two bosses, and whichever choice you make, whether you end up deciding in the end to go with the Templars or the Mages, you still end up having to kill the leader of both factions, and there's no choice about that. So you, whichever side you choose, it doesn't make a difference. But for me, the real big narrative choice in the game comes before that, because one of your party members is a guy called Anders, who's a mage, who is very, very keen on mage freedom and very committed and quite an extremist. And over the years in Kirkwall, you see him become more and more convinced that there is no way to end this conflict peacefully, but he's going to do whatever he can in order for it to be resolved in the mage's favour. And he's also going to do whatever he can to stop this stalemate that's been hanging around and to get the conflict started. So he actually blows up a chantry, which is a church. And in it is a very high-ranking member of the world's religion, who was a very decent, very diplomatic, fair woman who was very much on the peacemaking side. And with him having murdered her and blown up the chantry and killed how many people in the aftermath, there's no way that peace is going to happen. He's started a war.
Yeah.
And this is a dude who's been hanging around with you for the past 7 game years that you've, you know, gone on adventures with, you've gotten to know. He could be your lover or your rival or your friend, depending on the decisions that you've made and whether you've made him hate you or like you, and whether you've started a romance with him. And you end up having to decide, do you let him go? Do you say forgive him and let him stay with the party? Or do you kill him for what he's done? And to me, that's the decision there that you have to make that really matters. What do you do with this person who's just done this horrific thing in context of everything you've seen throughout the game and everything you've done with him throughout the game? You know, what is the right thing to do in that situation?
That is a much more character-focused style of story, isn't it? Where it's not about necessarily the sort of physical path that you take and, which leader do you kill or anything like that, but more about how you feel about the things you do. And, you know, you're going to do this. This is going to happen. You're going to do this because it's part of the story. But how are you as a player going to feel? And what is going to motivate your character as you do them? And that will come through these choices that you mentioned you make earlier. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of that's the big one. There's loads of those choices all throughout the game, and you can completely change the tone of how the game feels, how you're reacting to the people around you and the kind of relationships you develop with them, because you can have the relationships in two directions. You can either, get along with them, really like them, and you have a friendship, or you can have do things that they hate and annoy them intensely, and then you end up having a rivalry. And either one of those, if you develop those relationships far enough in either direction, that gives you advantages in the game, and decides whether or not they're going to stick with you at the end, or they're going to say, sod this, I want nothing to do with this ridiculous fight and I'm going to leave, which is part of there are quests for each companion in each act of the game. It has three acts, and you can completely ignore them if you want to. But if you do that, then at this point at the end, after you've decided what to do with Anders, they will abandon you. Whereas if you get involved in their lives and you help them out, either in ways that they can't stand or ways that they approve of, then they care enough at the end to stick with you. You know, and that sort of sense of achievement of them deciding to stay with you, or the feeling that they just couldn't care less what happens to you or the city, you know, that changes the feel of the thing. And you can lead them to some pretty horrible fates as well. I mean, one of the characters is an elf who's escaped slavery in another country. And throughout the game, his motivation is he wants to kill his former master. And eventually there's a confrontation between the two of them. And you have the option to either, stand with your companion and defend him and kill the slaver, or you can just hand him back and say, off you go with him, and that's him out of the game.
Oh wow.
And that's his fate that you've brilliantly decided to do.
What kind of a player would give him back?
Someone who's not very nice. You can play a terrible person in this. there are these fates for many of your companions. There's another one that you can hand back to a race called the Qunari, who are hanging out in the city, and they're looking for this artifact, and they hate Kirkwall and they hate the people in it, but they don't want to start a fight because that's not why they're here. They're here to find this artifact, and it so happens that one of your companions has nicked it. And when you find this out, she makes a run for it. And if you have a sufficiently deep relationship with her, whether friendship or rivalry, she will come back with the artifact to help you out, which is, great. And then you have a decision to make. Are you going to defend her when the Qunari leader decides, right, okay, you've brought the artifact back, but you nicked it, and we'd like to, we're leaving the city now and we're taking you with us. Are you going to defend her, or are you going to hand her over and say, off you go? And you avoid a fight for yourself by doing that, but you might feel quite bad about it.
Yeah, sure. I would think so.
So basically you can decide to ruin the lives of the people that are adventuring with you, if that's what you want to do, and you can make them all despise you. And I have gone through the game being the worst possible person I could be, and it feels completely different.
Changes the tone of the game, does it?
Very much so. It's not very cheering. They're quite snarky at you. They're not very impressed, and they tell you that they don't like you very much and you feel judged.
Do you get an achievement at the end?
Good point. I don't actually know if there's a made everyone hate you achievement.
That would be great, wouldn't it? A total jackhole achievement or something.
Yeah.
As I've seen it described, for listeners who are trying to get their head around it, the idea is that you have sort of bars, like meters of either friendship or rivalry.
Yes.
And when you reach 100% in either of them, if it's friendship, then basically you've got somebody who is loyal to you because you know, they have come to regard you as one of their greatest friends. If it's rivalry, then they'll stick with you because they may not like you, but they respect you and they actually want to try and outdo you. So they're constantly getting in fights and doing well in fights with you because they're trying to, it's the old dwarf elf, like, you know, Gimli and Legolas counting orc kills and stuff, isn't it? You know, 15, 16.
Yeah, that is pretty much how it works.
So I have to ask, was any of this, because this that sounds great and it sounds like real meaningful decisions from a character point of view rather than saving the world from, you know, the great evil point of view. Was any of that in Dragon Age 1? Because I know that that was a huge epic heroic story, but were any of those sort of character dilemmas, or were many of them in there, and were they handled as well as in this one?
There were. I was quite, when I went to investigate after I'd played the game a couple of times, and didn't mind getting spoilers for what was going on. I found out that there were ways, because I have such trouble playing an evil character. I feel really guilty about it. And even when I'm trying really hard, it's like I get so tense, because, you know, I know the characters judge you, and I know they don't, they're not real, and yet they feel real. Their words are real. Their eyes are just being real. But there were plenty of ways to mess up Dragon Age Origins in terms of really making things rather unfortunate for your fellow companions, and getting them killed accidentally and stuff, mostly which could be avoided by just generally being a decent human being and not doing anything terrible. There was the one obvious one where I almost accidentally got Alistair killed at the end, but by handing him over for a decision on who's going to be king or queen, and if you chose in order to be queen, then one of your companions called Alistair, she'd immediately say, oh, well, he's going in a cell, and then you'd have to plead for him, or you could say, sure, chop his head off, I don't care, and he could get himself killed, which is nice.
Wow.
You could do some, if you were going to mess about and desecrate some certain religious artifacts, some of your companions would get tetchy about that and try and kill you.
Oh, they would try to kill you? Oh, that's brilliant.
Yes. Yeah. My favourite one, the one that I actually did, was there's a character called Sten, who's one of these Kunari people, he's not very talkative. And as I'd learned from other games, you know, you want to talk to your companions and get to know them. And so I tried to do this quite early on with Sten, and he really did not approve of it at all. And it really annoyed him. And then we started to go on a quest to get some ashes of a dead lady for a magic medicine.
As you do.
Yeah. Halfway up a mountain, Sten stops the party and is like, I'm really sick of this. I mean, we're wandering all over the world and now we're going up this stupid mountain looking for this ridiculous thing. You really shouldn't be in charge. You're an idiot. And then he tries to kill you.
Wow.
Which is like, wow, that's nice, Sten. Thanks. But he's okay. If you beat him, he'll be like, okay, maybe you should be in charge. But it was still like, I was, just because I talked to him, I'd managed to get the original Dragon Age doesn't have the same approval system. It only really matters if you get companions to really like you. If they really hate you, they might just get up and leave.
Ah, right.
There's no rivalry thing there. So because I'd been very chatty with Sten and just wanted to get to know him better, he was really annoyed at me already. And then he got really annoyed about the mountain thing. And it was just like, I just thought it was a great moment when the first half, I was like, oh my god, I've really pissed him off.
Right, you've got so bad here that he's actually going to try and kill you.
Yeah, but it was like, oh, I just wanted to get to know you. As I discovered in later games, if you give him presents first and then chat to him, he's a lot happier about it.
Oh, how shallow.
I know, they're all very shallow people. It turns out the present systems is dubious. Well, I break some immersion for me a little bit there.
But I was going to mention immersion because you were saying that you don't like playing. I'm the same. I don't like playing evil characters particularly. In a serious game, in a comedy game, fine. But, you know, if I'm playing something where I am playing through a sort of, you know, seriously toned story, yeah, I don't like being bad and making sort of evil decisions and stuff because it just kind of, I don't know, it just doesn't feel right. And I think that's a function of immersion, and that's a, you know, it reflects well on the game because it shows that you are immersed in this fiction, just in the same way that you would get immersed in a book or a movie or a comic or a TV show or any other kind of fiction. You know, that is one of the things that shows how games have the same power, contrary to what many people will, you know, will argue, that they really can suck you in so that you get immersed to the point where you do care about what a collection of pixels and algorithms says about you.
Yeah, I find that I get much more, I can have a much stronger emotional reaction to a game, generally speaking, than television or book. And I think it's because I'm partially directing the action. I'm making the choices.
Because of the interaction, yeah.
Yeah, and therefore it's hitting me harder when something terrible happens because it's like it's my fault. Even if it's like it's a pre-programmed event, it's like, I walked over there.
People who have played the games are now going to be outraged that I'm comparing them. But some of the things you've mentioned remind me of a recent game from David Cage called Beyond Two Souls. He's the guy who did like Heavy Rain and games like that. Beyond was the one that starred Ellen Page and also Willem Dafoe. And it's a really linear cinematic game and you can only make choices. It branches, but you can clearly only make choices at certain points. It's very much an interactive movie style of game. Mm. And after finishing it, I went and looked at, you know, alternate endings and stuff and basically discovered that, like you were saying, you can't actually control that much. The story is going to go in this direction no matter what you do. But having, you know, when I read what the other endings were, mm. I was like, oh yeah, and if I'd made that decision and then got to the ending and this had happened, I would have felt completely different about the character and the game. Even though the same events would have happened, I would have felt completely different about them and had a vastly different experience. And I think that's a really good and powerful way to use interactive fiction. I'm not saying it's the only way. I'm not trying to, you know, say that it's the best way, mm-hmm. but it's a really good, powerful way to present interactive fiction. And in many cases, to get people who might actually not be conversant with interactive fiction in games and stuff, to get them involved because it is closer to what they are used to experiencing in books or movies or TV.
Yeah, no, I think that makes sense. That works well.
But I think it's kind of crazy that I'm, like I say, I know the games are nothing alike.
I haven't played it, so I can't.
In terms of mechanics, it's all quick time events. I mean, in terms of, you know, in terms of mechanics, it's like comparing Dragon's Lair with Outrun or something. They're just completely, you know, completely different games.
Yeah, no, I think fair point. It's just, it's reminding me of something else. That's the narrative structure. That makes sense. The narrative structure of Dragon Age 2 as an RPG is quite different to what I was used to, especially because once I discovered BioWare, I went back and played all the BioWare games, Neverwinter Nights and Baldur's Gate. And there's generally the, you have the introductory section and then you get your main quest and there's, I don't know, four or five quest points that you go to do various things and it gives you the feeling of freedom because you can technically do them in any order. And then you come to the concluding section. And one of the things Dragon Age 2 is it just completely it doesn't have anything like that. It has three very loosely associated arcs, and for the second and third one going in, you really don't even have a clue what you're doing or what you're supposed to do or what the objective of things is. You just sort of stumble through, and occasionally people send you a letter or say, could you come and see the dude in charge of this thing here, and then just following along trying to make the best of things without having any sort of plan or objective in mind, which I thought made a refreshing change to things.
And presumably things do also occur because of what you were saying about your companions having lives and motivations of their own as well.
Yes, yeah. That's actually the companion quest aspect of things is, I found, a massive improvement on Origins. Origins, you get the campsite where you can all hang out and you can go have a wee chat with them. And they each get their own individual quests, but they're generally very small quests to do. You go to one location, you have a bit of a chat with someone, or you fight some things, and something works out, and you That's it. Whereas in Dragon Age, the companion police play a much bigger part of things. There's one for, assuming you don't kill anyone or drive them off or anything like that and they stick around, there's one for each of the acts. So you, each companion gets their own little storyline or subplot that you can work through and end up doing very different things. Well, we'll end up with very different outcomes for them, depending on what you decide to do. And whether you choose to be helpful or nice, even if you intend to be quite, even if you don't intend to be terrible, they can sometimes accidentally do terrible things.
They could still backfire on you.
Yeah, I made a tiny mistake once at the end of the first act. The objective is you have to just get a whole load of money because you're going on this trip underground to go and get some treasure, you know, big expedition, and you have the choice of which, because it's going to take weeks, you can't take everyone with you. You can take three companions with you. You're stuck with one, Varric, the storyteller, who's a dwarf and brilliant, possibly the best character in the whole of Dragon Age. He's very funny and chatty, and you pick the two others, and if you decide to pick your sibling to go with you, It's entirely possible that they're going to die down there and it's going to be entirely your fault and you're going to feel very bad about it because just before you go, your mother begs you not to take your sibling with you. There is a way to save them, but yeah. So I remember that happening and thinking, this is horrible. I don't want to do this. I'm going to make a different decision.
That's like the game equivalent of the soldier who's got, like, you know, a week until he goes home and shows you a picture of his wife who's waiting for him. he's going to die.
Yeah, there was 1 week till retirement and then they got shot.
Having the character's mother, well, and your mother as well,
yes!
I assume then. Yes, yes, saying don't take your, is it brother, sister? Could it be either?
It depends on which class you choose.
Right, but yeah, saying don't take your sibling with you on these adventures, it's dangerous. That's kind of a big clue that something bad is going to happen, isn't it?
Yeah, but the really delightful is something not that great happens if you leave them behind as well.
Oh, really? So, oh, fantastic.
That's how fun the game is. No matter which choice you make, something terrible happens. So really, when something nice happens or you really get a victory, it really feels well earned because you're like, oh yeah, at last, a good thing. Well done me. I deserved it.
Oh, fantastic. It's kind of not quite a Hobson's choice, but yeah, a bad, you know. I like that.
There are definitely worse choices and worse outcomes, and or you know, just choices between different shades of grey. I do like the moral, you know, a decent morally complex choice is quite nice. There are some side quests that are quite. I don't know what the right answer is to some of them. I mean, there isn't a right answer. That's the whole point.
Right. But you don't know what the optimum answer is necessarily.
Yeah, I feel like I don't think there should be one. It's just they make me think enough about them that I know there isn't a proper answer, but I have to carefully consider what my decision actually means, kind of thing, which is something that was less so in Dragon Age Origins because it's much clearer. I mean, it's still quite a dark, greyish game, but they're generally speaking, there are much clearer choices between black and white there, which sometimes is nicer. But
this is much more about shades of grey by the sounds of it, yeah.
Yeah, which technically I prefer, even though sometimes I just like the simplistic choice of being good or evil.
Well, yeah, sometimes you just want to play, you know, good guys and bad guys, don't you? Yeah. But it does, from everything you've said, it does sound to me like this is certainly a game that I probably would regard as superior, even if technically it may not be and you're restricted to the, you know, the size of the world and what have you. It just sounds like a much more enjoyable game to play to me.
I do think that if you're coming at it much later, anyone who came at it now and was sort of aware of what it was about and their expectations were very much in keeping with what the game actually is rather than what they would really like it to be or what they're expecting after the first one, that they'll have a much better reaction to it than coming out after Dragon Age Origins and having it been directly compared to that without any looking backwards at things and seeing them more clearly. That thing.
Nostalgia. Oh, hindsight.
Yes, that's the word. See? I know what words are and what they mean. But yeah, no, it is a fantastic game for characters, though. That's its real strength. And I really think that these are the characters that I would want to read more about or watch more about. They do extraordinarily well, even in sort of very... when they've only got a little bit of screen time. There's the leader of the Templars is Knight Commander Meredith, and you only hear about her a little bit for about two-thirds of the game, and then she makes her first on-screen appearance in the last third, and it's very effective. It's a fantastically just the sort of her battle to decide what the best thing to do is, the fact that she is not exactly conflicted, but she's aware that what she's doing isn't the only option, but she doesn't see what any other options are to protect the people of the city. Mm-hmm. That she sort of knows she does have a conscience, but she ignores it. At least I get the feeling she does. And then she makes some very, very bad choices at the very end.
See, the character, what is a story without character? And you've got to, I feel that you have to focus on that to make a great story. Obviously, you need a good story, a good plot as well. But without the characters in it, there is no plot. So this emphasis on character development and character stories and dilemmas over epic save the world from the bad demons kind of story, it really appeals to me. I like that.
Yeah. And there's something, there's a completely different kind of excitement in watching Meredith face off against the Orsino, who's the dude in charge of the mages in the tower, and the arguments that they have in the last act of the game, and their different perspectives, and both of them talking to you about, you know, how they see things and what their point of view is. And that tension there is... something that I mean, it's not like I always want one over the other, but I much prefer that to the facing off against a demonic old god dragon, which is clearly evil and you can't chat to, and you don't know what its motivations really are, and you just have to kill it.
Well, and it doesn't stimulate your brain.
Well, it does tactically, because you're having to fight it, which is the one good difference. But yes.
But philosophically, it doesn't. And I have no problem with, yeah, you know, there's the big epic stuff, and yeah, kill all the bad guys and have a really good, amazing fight against a big bad guy. I mean, I love the Batman games, for example, which, you know, there's no grey area there. They are all very black and white. You're Batman. You know, beat up the bad guys. And that's fine. And I have nothing against that. I love that. There's time and place for it. But if I am going to play a character-driven, narrative-heavy story, then yes, absolutely, I want something that makes me think and consider my philosophies and outlook on life, and, you know, has the power to make me really think about my opinions.
Yeah. And I'm very, and it's coming after the game where you had the more simplistic choices and the epic stuff, so you get both. So it's you know, rather than having two where you have the same kinds of choices and the same kinds of narrative, which I like having a choice. But what do I feel like playing? Variety in games.
Hurrah. All right, let's bring it to a close there. Liz, thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Where can people find you if they like what you have to say about Dragon Age or anything else?
If they like what I have to say about Dragon Age, they can find me at my desk, where I'm often playing computer games and expressing myself verbally on what I feel about what's happening on screen. I can be found at LM Miles for Twitter, and lmmiles.wordpress.com for my absolutely fascinating blog. And I appear regularly talking about Doctor Who on the Verity podcast. And I suspect by the time this comes out that there'll also be episodes of my new podcast, which I co-host, called Down and Safe, which is a Blake 7 podcast, should you like more classic British SF.
Oh, wow. I'm going to have to listen to that. I loved Blake 7.
Very sensible of you. It's quite a good show.
The ending of Blake 7. Everybody talks about. I don't know how old you are, but I'm old enough that I watched it, you know, first time round, and I was a young kid when that series ended.
Did that cheer up your Christmas?
Oh my goodness.
Just No, I was...
But it was amazing. It had such an impact on me as a storyteller.
Wow. No, I just try to imagine what it was like for the people who were around when that was going on during Jolly Christmas season. Yeah.
pretty much stare at the TV open-mouthed. You've been listening to Unjustly Maligned, episode 19, with Anthony Johnston and Liz Miles. Unjustly Maligned is a 7RQ production for The Incomparable and is made in England. If you're enjoying the show, please consider taking a moment to rate and review us on iTunes. It really helps. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Actually, have you ever played Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay? Not battle, but the roleplay.
No. I know what Warhammer is.
Right. There is a tabletop, like an old tabletop RPG. That they released.
I'm familiar with it. It's very miserable.
Right. Well, that's the thing. That's what struck me about when you were talking about how your character can't affect the world and you're kind of low powered. And I'm like, that's pretty much exactly what WFRP is.
It's not as bad as Warhammer. Some people have happy lives, presumably, in the sort of background. They're there all the way through and they definitely don't die and you don't kill them.
And they don't get infected by chaos or something. Yeah.
No. Well, they might get... They don't get infected by demons, or which would be the equivalent.
The equivalent, here. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the great thing about Warhammer is that, you know, even in the official campaign that they released back in the 80s to go along with the first edition of the role-playing game, which was called The Enemy Within, you start off as literally nothing. You are literally, you know, sort of the lowest of the low. And you can work your way up to becoming sort of like big heroes. Mm. But even then, most of the time, the stuff you're doing is very localized. You know, it's not until the very end that you actually get things like a magic hammer and stuff that can, you know, change the world. Most of the time, there is all this politics and fighting and chaos stuff going on around you, and you can't really affect it that much.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I have read a bit about Warhammer, and it just depressed me. But I play Skyrim and ignore the fact that I'm supposed to be the chosen, the dragonborn saving the world. Pay no attention to the main narrative and just go off and do the endless side quests.
Oh, really?
Of picking roots and vegetables and giving them to people.
And encountering men who took an arrow in the knee.
Yes, although, thank God, there is a mod that cuts that right down. Oh, really? Yes. I have a beautifully modded version of Skyrim, which deals with endless arrows to the knees and gives the mud crabs monocles. That seems more in keeping with the Elder Scrolls universe, where you escape as a prisoner in rags at the beginning of every game and then have to slowly crawl your way to not dying via mud crab.
Ah, okay. Well, maybe I should seek those out.
Those are also excellent games. That's great. You don't have to bother with an... Oh, wait, hang on. You like narrative.